Welcome to episode 58 of Pod Your Own Adventure. Today's episode, The Forbidden Castle by Edward Packard. Hello, ho, welcome back to Pod Your Own Adventure. My name's Robin, and an interesting fact about me is that I spent this weekend at my girlfriend's parents' place. I met their elderly neighbour, Morag, who, on her mobility scooter, has a bumper sticker on the front that says Hell's Angel, and another one on the back that says Number One Bitch. I'm joined today by Hell's Angels, Knorr, Logan, and Titus. Hello.
I'm sorry, but I'm a Number One Bitch. No, Hell's Angel. God,
you're my number one bitch.
I was liking that story when you said that her name is Morag.
It's a good name. Yeah, isn't
that's,
it?
That's an excellent name.
It's a solid name. I'm hoping it's a taken name, because I feel like a person that decided to name themselves Morag is way cooler than someone that was named Morag from the get go.
I feel like both are potentially very cool.
Well, yes.
Like if they were named Morag from the get go, then their parents were like, yeah, our kid's going to be cool. Apparently, Morag has also got a taser. That
does not surprise me at all. That sounds like something Morag would have.
She's also got another sticker on her mobility scooter that says, I'm going on an adventure before dementia.
She's living her life.
I honestly wish I could be as cool as Morag someday. Nuggan, this is your first time on the show, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Knorr, you've been on before, and Titus, you've been on regularly, should
we say. Part of the lads' regiment.
The banter...
Banter Brigade.
Tuesday? Yes. Ugh. Sorry, I'm going to open my bottle of Coke.
Okay. Now that the audio has been ruined, I guess we can all talk about what's going on around us. I'm petting a cat, drinking tea, and trying to ignore the burnt smell coming from my kitchen.
That's not so bad. Titus, what's up with you?
I'm hanging out.
Good. I actually feel like I glossed over this. Hmm? Knorr, why is there a burning smell in your kitchen?
Because...
No, let's keep ignoring it.
Yeah, let's not address this.
everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
You said
fine.
It now.
No, it's my pie has what the people on... Great British Bake Off would call a soggy bottom, and I refuse to accept that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I'm That's keeping so it in the oven until it knows its place.
So now we have burning smells.
Oh, geez.
I think it's going to have what will be known in the cook-off show in Great Britain as the East London chimney top. I don't know why I went for East London there. I have no idea of regionalities, but I just meant it's going to burn.
I feel like every time Knorr, you come on the show, we end up talking about Bake Off.
What? Did you know that season 2 of Great Australian Bake Off is coming this year?
That sounds pretty good, actually.
Wow.
It's like a slightly worse version of Great British Bake Off.
Like Australia itself.
But yeah, but it's still a slightly worse version than Great British Bake Off. So, I mean, it's amazing.
Titus, what's going on with you? You said that you'd been petting a cat?
No, that was me. No. I'm the cat petter here.
I have not pet a cat in quite some time. That's not an interesting fact. That's a sad fact. An interesting fact is... over the weekend, there was a velo bus parked outside my house. It was one of those velo buses that had a bar in it, and it was full of drunk lads that just went, "Way!" every time a car went by and beeped at them.
Was it? Would you say it was lads on tour?
It was lads on parade.
All hell. Can't bounce us now. I've lost my train of thought entirely. Nuggan, hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's good. I'm in a real comfortable chair. I'm having a beer. I'm holding a snake. It's good times.
Are you some kind of evil villain? Like,
I mean, I might be. I can't really be sure.
I don't think
until someone tries to stop me, then I really won't know for sure.
That's a good point.
I mean, most evil villains would argue that they're not evil and they're justified in their cause.
That's very
true. I'm going to throw this out here. I don't think Bear is an evil villain, Jink. I think evil villains would go for something like wine.
Wine, yeah.
Maybe whiskey, depending on what kind of evil villain.
A nice glass of Merlot.
Complete evil villain then, because I feel uncomfortable opening a bottle of wine just for myself.
Yeah. I got
yeah, no, okay, but the psychopathy test has been passed. You wouldn't open a wine bottle for yourself.
I wouldn't do that either, but that's more because I'm cheap than anything else. I'm like, I can't drink it. I can't sit here and be drunk on my own. I'm not getting good value for money.
No, I obviously have no problem being drunk on my own. I'm having beer.
Yeah, you don't get drunk on one beer.
That's true, but I didn't say I was only planning to have one.
No, but I guess, you know what? Let's get together tomorrow and evaluate our drink choices for tonight and see if we got our money's worth.
Sounds good.
Because I feel like at this point, it's just speculation.
I will update this, the podcast notes, with the results of this conversation between you two, of course.
Well, thank you.
Logan, tell me what about your snake. What is your snake's name?
We call him Chef. His name is Chef.
Like, why are they?
He's a very picky eater, which is why we call him Chef. He has to have his food exactly right.
Fair enough. See, I've heard that you shouldn't trust a skinny chef, but snakes generally aren't chubby in my experience, so who even knows what's going on anymore in the world. Let's get off this subject, and I'm going to start the show before, because I just realised that was awful and I fell on my face. How's it going, everybody?
No,
this
is
your first time listening. If this is your first time listening, then the concept for each show is...
fuck off!
Shut the fuck up! I get different guests each week, we read through Choose Your Own Adventure books. I do the commentary, they do the choices, and the commentary as well. I've exploited these people for their goofs, and we'll see where the story takes us. We usually go off topic a lot. This one's A Choose Your Own Adventure by Edward Packard. It's called The Forbidden Castle, and there's probably some fantasy stuff in it. You will know that a few episodes ago we read through The Cave of Time as part of the live show. Well, in the very first paragraph, let's begin on page one, shall we? You promised yourself never to go back into the Cave of Time, but when you found the opening behind a big boulder in Red Creek Canyon, you couldn't resist. The cave seemed darker than before. You slipped and fell, your head hit something, and here you are lying in a field, looking up into the branches of a big oak tree, with no idea of where you are or even what century it might be. Now you may never see your family and friends again. So, I feel like the author is trying to establish an extended canon, possibly.
You know what? I'm not sure I want to choose my own adventure for a fucking bumbling idiot.
They're all bumbling idiots in these books.
Yeah, but usually it's like the story itself that's a bumbling idiot. This one clearly starts with, yeah, so you found a thing, and then against your own better judgment, you just fell into it, and now you're stuck here.
I mean, it seems like at this point that you feel that this is inevitable. You told yourself you'd never go in the Cave of Time again after, you know, countless other times. You've just given up at this point. You just,
I can't fight it. I'm going to go in the Cave of Time.
It also seems like
again.
You keep stumbling on it, like, randomly. Oh, well, I'm no Cave of Time behind this boulder. Ah, there it is again.
Cave of Time. Well, it's 5 p.m. somewhere.
Thank God it's Friday. Like, I feel...
I hope they have a Cave of Time in hell.
In the original Cave of Time as well, a lot of the endings end up... Well, like, at one point, we get eaten by Nessie. But in this, it's saying that there's only one ending that is strictly canon, or, like, several endings, where we get out and go, phew, that stank. Let's not do that again. But, like...
Well,
this is messing with the entire concept of these books. Rubbing your aching head, you take in the scene around you. Nearby, you see a narrow dirt road, and beyond it, a fast-running brook. The road disappears into dense woods on either side of the field. You hear the sound of hooves and a strange clanking noise. Someone is coming. You duck behind a tree as two men on horseback ride towards you. They're wearing shining metal armor. One of them carries a white banner with a golden lion on it. They must be knights. You watch as they rein in their horses and dismount just a few yards away. It's been a long ride, Sir Rupert, says the taller one, and you have a long time to think. Tell me, have you solved the riddle of the Forbidden Castle?
Good.
Nice embellishment.
Thank you. In truth, Sir Godfrey, I have tried, and so has everyone else in England. What a reward King Henry has offered. Half the Kingdom of Wales. A handsome reward indeed, Sir Godfrey replies, but not an over-generous one, for the old monk promised King Henry that if he conquered the Forbidden Castle, he would rule all of Europe. The knights fill their flasks with water from the stream. As they walk back to their horses, Sir Godfrey says, we must get on to Cotwin Castle. The king expects us before the sun passes behind the West Tower. He will be angry if we are late.
So here's my question immediately.
Go ahead.
It's called the Forbidden Castle, but, like, its exploration seems to be encouraged by the king?
Yeah.
So why is it called the Forbidden Castle?
Because maybe his dad... Right, this is my theory. His dad said, you can't go in that castle, it's forbidden. And he's like, ugh, fine. And then his dad died when he was 40, because it was Middle Ages, and people just would die on the spot back then. And you're lucky to get to 40. And so now that his son's
the
king...
No, it wasn't in the Middle Ages, like... Life expectancy was like 20, but if you got to 20, you'd be like, you'd live to 80.
I think
that sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah.
It could just be, it could work on the same principle as the Forbidden Palace in Beijing. So, like, everyone knows where it's at, and everyone's like, ooh, they'll be mad if you go in there.
No, but in that, in the case of a Forbidden Palace, is forbidden by the...
The emperor, isn't it?
The emperor, yeah. Like, it's forbidden by the emperor and such. And in this case, it is actually encouraged to go into the Forbidden Castle by the local
authorities. But as far as we know, only by knights in shining armor, which you could argue is part of the court. So
It sounds
like
to me
plebs
more like...
and farmers are still banned. Like,
He's talking about the riddle of the Forbidden Castle. So what better way to get people to want to go solve the riddle of the Forbidden Castle than saying, no, that's the Forbidden Castle. You can't go in there.
No.
That's a strong point.
Not for you. Okay. A little bit of reverse encouragement or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it.
Sir Rupert says aye as he vaults onto his horse. The king has been in a fearsome temper since he learned that there have been foreign spies in the English court. And now he has ordered that all suspicious-looking travellers shall be locked in the dungeon. As the knights prepare to ride off, you wonder whether you should come out from behind the tree. You're wearing 20th-century clothing. Surely you'll look suspicious to these knights. On the other hand, you can't...
Hey, that's a Van Halen shirt, says Sir Geoffrey.
Shredding it. You've got a baseball cap on backwards. What are you doing here, kid? So you can either wait for the next passerby, or you can step out from our hiding place and say hello to these knights. By the way, our character in this is American as well. The Cave of Time was in Oregon or somewhere. I can't remember off the top of my head.
That makes sense.
Okay, so I assume everyone's agreeing with me that we're not going to step out and say hi, because that would be even more stupid than we've been so far.
We are not stepping out from behind anything. We're staying right here.
Step out behind it and say, hi, I've got a death wish. You've got a big sword.
I hear
Maybe
you have
work something out.
I hear you have a forbidden castle. I just stumbled into...
It'd be a shame if something were to happen to it.
I stumbled into this forest region and fell into all of this exposition, and now I feel like, you know what, you seem like good blokes, so...
Yeah. You decide to wait. As the knights ride out of sight, you hear a deep voice behind you. Are you going to stand behind that tree all day?
Jeez, we've been here 5 minutes!
Turning, you look up into the eyes of a giant of a man. He is wearing leggings and a tunic made from deerskin. He holds a bow in one hand, a quiver filled with arrows strapped over one shoulder. You don't want King Henry's knights to see you, eh? He laughs and adds, then you are a friend to me. Those puppets give you more trouble than they are worth. He bends down and looks close at your face. My word, I've never seen the likes of you in these woods. I am a stranger from another place and another time, you say. Could you tell me what year it is? The giant laughs again. I don't keep count, he says, and I have never seen why anyone should. Garth is my name, and you can stay with me if you like. Where do you live, you ask? Garth answers with a wave of his arm. My house is the whole forest. There is plenty of food, and plenty to do. It is the only place where a person can be free. Why not join me? Of course, if you're bothered by a little rain and wind now and then, you can follow that road to Cotwin Castle. They'll give you a roof over your head. I must warn you, though, it might be the roof of a dungeon. So we can either go to Cotwin Castle and get ourselves locked up in a dungeon, or we can say, party on Garth, and hang out with the archer.
I was so sure he was going to say, oh, I live under a bridge. But it turns out he wasn't a troll. I say hang out in the woods.
Yeah, let's go to the woods.
Let's meet Robin Hood.
That's a different book, I think. You've always wanted to learn how to live in the wilderness. This seems like the perfect chance.
Yeah, the Middle Ages.
Yeah, because as soon as we go into any kind of wilderness, we fall down and hit our head and wake up in England.
We're just generally incompetent.
It just keeps happening.
You follow Garth as he leads you through pine forests, across roaring brooks and up steep rock ledges. The sun has dipped below the western hills when you reach a shelter under a rock ledge. You help him gather sticks and pine boughs, and you're soon warming your hands before a blazing fire. Why do you live in the woods like this, you ask? He grins. Ever since I told King Henry that he was no better man than anyone else, he set a price on my head. He has lost 5 of his best knights trying to bring me to the gallows. Before I met you, I have overheard his knights talking about some riddle. Do you know anything about it? Yes, and it is quite a story, says Garth. About a year ago, an old monk visited the king and told him about a mysterious castle. Of course, the king demanded to know where this castle is, but the monk would not tell him. Instead, he recited a strange riddle and then said, who solves the riddle will find the castle, and who conquers the castle will rule all Europe. Ever since then, King Henry has been trying to solve the riddle. He is angry because none of his wise men can do so. So when it says King Henry has been trying to solve the riddle, he means King Henry has been paying people to solve the riddle for him.
It's kind of trying to solve the riddle.
I guess.
In a sense.
Do you know the answer to the riddle?
Yes.
Garth laughs. I do not even know the riddle. If you want to find out, you must gain admittance to King Henry's court. You may succeed, but if they suspect you're a runaway serf, they will throw you in the dungeon. You have no way of knowing what may lie in store at Cotwin Castle, but it's risky staying with Garth. He has said himself that the king's knights are searching for him.
How?
So, sorry.
I keep forgetting how stupid these books are. Please continue.
Well, I mean, they are for children. But that's not really much of an excuse now I think about it.
This is... So our option is to hang out with Garth, which may be dangerous because one of the king's knights may come into the woods, or we can go to the place where the king's knights hang out.
Yes.
Because it's less dangerous to face your... problems head on.
Well,
what was that film we watched a while ago with the kid that gets the magical BMX bike and then uses that to rob banks or something?
It's something like magical BMX bike.
Yeah.
Was it a BMX bike? I thought it was like a motorcycle.
It was a motorcycle, you're right. Like, it was a motocross bike.
Yeah, that was it. And then it just comes to life and...
And didn't it, like, flirt with his mom?
I think so. And there was a bit, it was pretty much fundamentally identical to that bit in The Dark Knight Rises where Bane drives his motorbike into the stock exchange.
Basically stolen from this movie. but what we know so far about our character's motivation, he's an American that would love to learn to live in the woods. And so far we've spent one evening in the woods. I would argue that we're not arrogant enough to assume that we know everything and should therefore stay in the woods.
Yeah. I mean, let's learn from the master,
Garth. Because, I mean, I have no indication that we love riddles.
Yeah. By the way, I just looked it up. Motocross Kid is not the film I was thinking of, but I'm looking at the poster for it, and it's got a chimp wearing... a jersey, doing a big smile, and it's got Gary Busey in it as well. It's
a chimp is
Fiver.
A kind of a kid, I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway, that was not the film I was thinking of, but I'm gonna keep trying to figure it out because that fucking movie. All right, so do we want to try luck at Cotwin Castle, or do we stay with Garth?
Stay with Garth.
Yeah, let's stay with Garth.
Also, right. It's the dirt bike kid.
Ah, thank you.
Which has an even better poster because it's him flying over a city on the dirt bike.
Does that happen?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Oh, yeah. God. It's all on YouTube, everybody. I recommend that you go and watch it.
Yeah, it's a cinematic piece.
It's not a shit piece,
it's a piece.
Life with Garth may not be easy or even safe, but he is a good friend, and you prefer the dangers of the forest.
I like life, like, he's already dedicated
Holy
himself.
Shit! I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's kind of a spiritual sequel called The Skateboard Kid.
What?
Where makes a discovery of his life, a talking, wisecracking, magical skateboard.
Wow.
Sounds pretty badass.
Please continue with the other magical business.
You join Garth in his forest kingdom. He teaches you how to hunt and fish. In the evenings, the two of you sit around the fire, and he tells stories of knights and dragons until you fall asleep, dreaming of days gone by with your family and friends, hundreds of years in the future. One day, Garth turns to you and says, "You've grown quick and strong, and wise in the ways of the forest. It's time for you to decide what sort of life you want to live. If you'd like a dangerous life where you might find fame and fortune, you can enter the court of Rufus, the Mad King of Hereford. Or if you wish, you can remain in the forest with me." So, do we want to go to the court of Rufus the Mad, or do we spend our life in the forest?
Life in the forest.
Yeah,
stay in the forest.
Dude, Mad King does not sound like a good thing.
I'm not leaving. Like, it's clear that this guy wants us to leave, but fuck that.
He's like, you know, you're really good at this forest stuff.
You've been here for, like, a few months at this point. Isn't, like, is there anything else you could be doing? No.
No.
Love in the forest.
Frankly, I'm afraid if we leave, we're just going to fall into the cave of time again.
Yeah.
You stay with Garth and live in the forest. You become strong and tough. You learn to make the best of the bad and enjoy the good. Over the years, others join you and Garth. Some of them are serfs who have run away from their masters. Others are knights who did not wish to spend their lives fighting for the king. By the time you grow up, Garth has grown too old to live the rough life of the forest. You become the leader of the clan. You make a deal with King Henry to protect travellers passing through the forest. In return, he gives you and your friends a castle of your own. It's not the life you expected, but it's as good as you could hope to find hundreds of years before your birth. The end.
Yes!
Yes!
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good ending, actually. I wasn't expecting us to become a folk hero.
Well, that was a good podcast. Let's talk more about The Skateboard Kid. It turns out there's a sequel, The Skateboard Kid 2.
Oh, of course there is.
Why not?
The Skateboard Kid? Fuck.
So it's also available on YouTube by the looks of things.
Good. Right. I'm glad that, like, there's a group of people just uploading all these really old, really shit films onto YouTube.
Really
hey,
shit.
We haven't
Believe
seen it
really
yet.
Good.
Okay, that's true. So maybe rude. The Skateboard Kid to the spirit, the sequel to the spiritual sequel to The Dirt Bike Kid. It might be good, you know?
It's probably
amazing. Really good.
Yeah.
No one could be more bored than Zach, the new kid in town with no friends in sight, when a gang of hip skateboarding thrashers start cruising his neighborhood.
Thrashers.
All right. So I kept my finger on the page. Do you want to see what happens if we enter the court of Rufus the Mad?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure, let's find out.
I'm grateful for all you've done for me, you tell Garth, but now I think I'd like to see more of the world. I'm willing to take my chances with Rufus the Mad King. I admire your courage, says Garth. Rufus may like you, and then again he may not. Or he may like you one day and hate you the next. Some say he's generous, some say he is mean. You will soon find out. For 3 days, Garth travels with you through the forest. When you reach a road that runs alongside a crystal clear lake, Garth stops and shakes your hand. Follow this road for a mile or so, and you'll reach Fiddlegate, the castle of Rufus the Mad. You bid him farewell and start along the road. You miss the company of your friend, but you're happy to feel the warm sun on your back, and to smell the fresh, clean air of the pine forest. The sun is high overhead when you find yourself at the top of a ridge. Ahead of you is a beautiful green valley. Beyond it is a great castle, with a stone tower which seems to be leaning slightly to one side. As you approach the front entrance, you notice that some of the walls are crumbling and the drawbridge is down. You would think the castle deserted were it not for smoke rising from the courtyard and the cows grazing in a nearby field. That Rufus. As you stand before the drawbridge, wondering whether to cross it, a bugle blows. After a few minutes, two guards appear at the entrance. They lead you to the large sunlit courtyard. The yard is covered with broken slate tiles. Clumps of weeds and shrubs poke out of the ground. I feel like they're trying to, like, paint Rufus in a really poor light.
Yeah, it does not seem...
Rufus the Mad King could be... he seems okay, it's just that maybe he's not so good at doing his upkeep on his...
Yeah, maybe he's not good at the whole, like, being a king thing.
Hmm. Again, the bugle sounds. More guards appear. They surround you and march you through the central arch, and then open ranks as a short, fat man waddles towards you. He wears a blue velvet robe and a golden crown on his bald head. Behind him is a very thin man wearing a pointed cap and bells. Surely this must be King Rufus and his court jester. A guard steps forward. King Rufus has deigned to look at you. You bow. King Rufus, I am honoured to visit your court. Silence! I do not ask you to speak, says the king. Turning to the jester, he says, Still well, what say you of this intrusion into our royal court? Tis a sour sorrow, to us all and all us too, says Stillwell. The king scowls and says nothing. And you know what kings say? The guard points a long bony finger in your face. Well, what have you to say for yourself? You feel you should say something, but you wonder if it would be wiser to wait until the king himself asks a question. So he can either say something or he can stay silent.
Well, he did ask us this time, right?
No, let's stay silent.
He said, what have you to say for yourself? So
let's speak up.
No, we have nothing.
I think...
What have you to say for yourself? Sorry, King, like...
Yeah, sorry,
I'm
man.
Kind of
I didn't come prepared. I didn't know there was going to be an interview here.
I think we're going
to
be...
have to bring my CV with me. It's the 1400s, so I blew it, basically.
All of my people skills are based on future tech. I think we're worse off if we don't say anything, so I'm all for not saying anything.
Keeping stum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's be quiet.
Okay. You're afraid to disobey the king, so you say nothing. Well, the king shouts, can't you speak? Before you can answer, the jester says, I suggest you teach this youth a lesson. Still, well, only a fool like you would surely know what not to do, says King Rufus. Why haven't I locked you up in the tower? Because, your majesty, says Stillwell, if you were to lock me up, it would mean you made a mistake when you appointed me. Since you are perfect, you cannot make a mistake, therefore you cannot lock me up. The king scowls and paces up and down. Finally, he turns to you. I do appreciate the king being trapped in his own logic there, by the way. That's some good shit.
Classic turnaround of a tyrant.
You have fallen into my favour, he says. It would have been better to have fallen into the moat, says Stillwell. The king smacks Stillwell over the head with the flat side of his sword. Which seems
harsh.
A bit excessive. But
that's
okay.
Pretty mean.
Yeah, that fucking hurt.
Turning to you, he says, If you agree to serve in my court, I shall make you one of my ministers. The king seems to have taken a liking to you. He's mad all right, yet there may be method to his madness. Maybe you'd even help you find...
The Forbidden Castle!
So we can ask King Rufus for help, or we can agree to serve in his court.
Serve, serve, serve.
Are we serving?
Sure. Yeah, let's serve.
I mean, he's gonna... we're gonna fuck up at some point, so he might as well extend the fuck up... able period.
Alright. I would be honoured to serve in your court, my lord. Very good, says the king. Tonight we shall have a banquet in my honour to welcome you. Stillwell... Oh, sorry, but I should not have drunk so much Coca-Cola before I started recording. Stillwell leads you up a spiral staircase to your new quarters, a tiny room with stone walls and nothing more than a bed of straw and a hole in the wall for a window. Your bed is almost as hard as the floor, but you lie down for a nap, for it's been a long time since you've had a good night's sleep.
What?
It seems no more that...
We've been in the woods for 6 months. Love the woods.
We do. Like, I know where they're getting this from, saying a bed of straw and a hole in the wall for a window. Like, man, these squalid conditions. We were literally sleeping under the trees.
Yeah. This is...
Maybe we were worried every night we'd, like, roll over and end up in the Cave of Time again.
That's true. Or
just roll over and start bouncing down a hill like that bitten hot rod. Okay, you're awakened by a knock at the door. Who is it? A page, sent to say the banquet is about to begin. The page leads you down the long spiral stairs to the great banquet hall. Peering through the archway, you can see that most of the guests are already seated. Your mouth waters at the sight and smell of roast goose, onions and gravy. As you start to enter the hall, a great hulk of a man blocks your way. You may not enter, he says, but the king himself invited me. The king did not invite you. What do you mean, you ask? Who are you to contradict me? The Minister of Contradiction, he replies. What kind of title is that? It is my job, he says. Too many people in the kingdom are contradicting each other, so the king banned it. He has decreed that all contradicting in the kingdom shall be done by me. God.
Okay.
Have we found the room for an argument then at this point? This is ridiculous. This book for children is ridiculous.
This is the first good bit.
Is everything you say a contradiction? No, the king has ordered me to contradict everything that is said by anyone but him. Then I cannot come to the banquet, you say. Oh, yes, you can, he shouts. He steps back a moment, and you dash into the hall, and quickly take an empty seat at the grand table. On your left is an old knight with a long, sad face. On your right is a woman wearing a white dress adorned with lace. Who are you, you ask the woman. I am the lady in red, she says. But your dress is white. How dare you contradict me, she says. Only the Minister of Contradiction can do that.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Wow.
I see what they've done there.
We're truly stuck in a Terry Gilliam piece here.
Turning to the knight on your left, you ask, and who are you? The Minister of Laughter, he says with a laugh. What does that mean? I decide what is laughable and what is not, he frowns. You cannot help but laugh. The minister reddens. How dare you laugh without my permission? At that moment, the king calls up and stands up and calls for silence. We welcome a new member of the court. Pointing at you, he says, rise. You stand up and the king unrolls a long scroll. We have just appointed a minister of craftiness, a minister of happiness, a minister of inaction, and a lady of ladies in waiting. There are only two openings left. Tell us which position you'd prefer. Would you rather be the minister of guesswork or the minister of sanity? You look around, hardly able to believe what the king has said. Only now do you fully understand why he's called the Mad King. Absurd as it is, you can see you'll have to pick one job or the other.
Guesswork so, seems
guesswork,
to be aligned with
yes.
what we've been doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the most thematically appropriate, I guess.
You don't want to be the sane one in an insane court anyways.
Well, not the same one. We're the Minister of Sanity.
But that's pretty much the closest, though. But, like,
no, but we would define what the sane and the word is insane. We could be like, hey, my king, have I ever told you the definition of insanity? That's some dumb shit from a video game.
Do you know
what a video game is?
The definition of insanity is to try something once, and then when it doesn't work, try something else.
Nice,
subverting the expectations.
Do you know what insanity means? A righteous infliction of retribution manifested by an appropriate agent, personified in this case by an horrible bastard, me.
What?
It's from Snatch. Bricktop says that.
Hi.
Let's go with guesswork.
Bricktop's a good name for an East End thug, I think. I would like to be Minister of Guesswork, you say. The assembled lords and ladies clap their hands and cheer. The king pounds on the table to silence them. Good choice, he says. One thing I have learned in this life is that no one can be sure of anything. Therefore, we need someone who will guess at everything. Again, the lords and ladies cheer. And again, the king bangs on the table until everyone is silent. Then he frowns and wiggles a finger at you. But I warn you that I expect the highest standards of performance from my ministers. Are you absolutely sure that you are capable of serving in this high position? You think for a moment and then reply, I guess so. The lords and ladies cheer.
Oh, yeah.
We did it. Well said, cries the king. You'll make a fine minister of guesswork. The lady in red and the minister of laughter pat you on the back as you begin your dinner. You reflect that, if you stay in the Mad Kingdom, you'll soon be as crazy as everyone else.
You don't have to be crazy to work in the Mad Kingdom.
Maybe Rufus is not as crazy.
But it helps.
Maybe Rufus is not as crazy as all the other kings and lords who spend their lives fighting each other. The end. I kind of feel that, like...
Is it just me, or are we amazing at this?
I think we're pretty good at this book.
We're definitely
I kind of feel
amazing.
Also them saying, the roast lamb and peach pie are the best you've ever eaten. Well, yeah, it's because we've been eating sticks and dirt for 6 months since
yeah,
the woods.
Yeah, but exquisite sticks and dirts. Free range.
Foraging, actually.
Yeah.
So that's one ending that we've just got there again. Do you want to see what happens if we choose to be the Minister of Sanity?
Yeah. Sure.
Sure.
I'll be Minister of Sanity, you say in a loud, clear voice. Your statement is met with groans and moans. Some of the lords and ladies begin to cry. Others throw their hands up in protest. The king stands up, his face is pale. I only said that as a joke, yet you accept it. This is near treason. You have never had a Minister of Sanity and never will. It would undermine the very principles on which our kingdom is founded. You must not have it, cries the knight sitting near you. Send this felon from our midst. It's time for a hanging, says another. To the stake, a lady cries. This is madness, you shout. Everyone rises and cheers. Ah, now that's what we want to hear, says the king. What you say is worthy of us all, and of you too. Henceforth you shall be Minister of Madness, the most important minister in the kingdom. Three cheers for our new minister, yells Stillwell the jester. Standing, you bow and thank the lords and ladies and the king. I'll do my best, you say, to uphold the king, to laugh at sadness, cry at smiles, and keep this wisdom free from logic, sense, and all that's wise. The end.
The end.
Rubbish.
Wow.
So, that was...
We just can't lose.
Yeah, we just...
You know what? Let's go. Let's follow those knights.
Right from the start.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Let's turn back the time.
I thought it would be easy to die in this, but apparently we're amazing in every possible way.
I think Ari Montgomery was a lot more trigger happy when it came to killing off the player as well.
Yeah.
I think there was one ending, was it in the one with the Yeti, the Abominable Snowman, where somebody can just light some incense and then we pass out and fall into a coma and never wake up from that as well.
That's a pretty solid one.
Nice.
Anyway, so let's step up from our hiding place and be like, party on, dudes. It's me, Wayne. I'm going to talk to these knights. Just as the knights mount their horses, you step up from behind the tree. Who are you? Asks Sir Godfrey. Where did you get those strange garments? I know a spy when I see one, says Sir Rupert. He leans over and pulls you up roughly on his horse. If this is not a spy, it is the devil. Sir Godfrey brings his horse up next to you and stares at you intently. The devil is crafty and knows how to assume an innocent form, but I will not be fooled. We'll take this devil to the castle, Rupert, and thence to the dungeon. See, they're very superstitious of us because I assume we must be wearing MC Hammer parachute pants or something.
No, we have like a Slayer shirt or something.
Those aren't mutually exclusive.
No, I hope they would be mutually exclusive, or else our main character is a fucking dweeb of like insane proportions.
I don't think when you wear the parachute pants, your legs actually like fill out as baggy as they are. Otherwise, those are some messed up proportions. You cling to the horse, trying to keep from falling off as the knights gallop to the castle yard. They drag you down a long flight of crumbling stairs. One of them opens a creaking iron gate. Another shoves you into a dark, musty room. The gate swings shut behind you. The floor of your new quarters is rock. There are no windows, only a few cracks in the wall that provide barely enough light for you to see your cellmate crouching in the corner. He is very thin, and his grimy hair hangs halfway down to his hips. Keep away from me, he shouts. Your clothes are made by the devil. Don't come near me. So, adds more credence to the Slayer shirt theory, of course. Please don't be afraid. I won't hurt you, but do you know what they will do with me? Most prisoners are beheaded, but if you are found guilty, they'll burn you at the stake. It is the only way to purge the devil from your soul. He steps closer. Don't worry. If you're innocent, you won't burn. That's not how it works, is it?
Why is he alive? No.
If you're innocent, you will burn, and they'll say, well, that was a shame, we just burned an innocent person. But if you're a witch, they'll burn you, and then you'll go like, ah ha ha, it's me, the witch, and none of this fire is hurting me at all. And they'll go, okay, now shoot her with a crossbow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it sounds like the judicial system.
Your tax dollars at work. You have only a few moments before your fate is sealed. Maybe the guards can help you. So you can either ask the guards to tell us the riddle of
the Forbidden Castle,
or we can ask them about what sort of a trial we will have.
Riddle, riddle.
Yeah, let's find out the riddle.
I mean, it's the title of the book. You know?
Yeah.
Please, you ask the two guards, tell me the riddle of
the Forbidden Castle.
The taller one looks down at you.
Listen to his voice as he speaks it. He must be a witch.
The taller one looks down at you, a stupid grin on his face, and pushes you through the crowd of people gathered in the courtyard. Knights and ladies in colourful robes are laughing and calling to each other. In the centre of the courtyard is a pile of wood set around a pole. A man stands next to the pole, holding a coil of rope in one hand and a knife in the other. The tall guard leans towards you. The Lord Chancellor will allow a final request before you are tied to the stake. He points to a man whose dark grey cloak reaches to his ankles. May I make a last request, you ask? The Chancellor looks at you coldly. What is it? Tell me the riddle of
The Forbidden Castle.
Little good it will do you, he says, but it is a simple enough request. He steps closer and looks at you curiously, then he says, somewhere south, where it is colder, where that which falls stays where it is, you'll find what isn't what it is. You stand there trying to figure out the riddle. The executioner steps forward with his coil of rope. You've only a minute left to live. Escape is impossible. Suddenly, the guards press you up against the stake. The rough, prickly rope pulls tight against your waist. You must say something now. So you can either ask them for a little time to solve the riddle, or you can say, stop, I have the solution to the riddle.
We have the solution.
We have a solution. Yeah,
I have a solution too.
I know what we're talking about.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, but I want to read that. What happens if you say, give us a bit more time, because it's funny. If you will just give me a little time, you say, I think I can solve the riddle. The guards laugh in your face. The Chancellor's mouth twists into a cruel smile. A little time will not do you any good, he says. You cannot solve that riddle in 100 years. The executioner flips a rope over your head and lashes you to the stake, and your last hope flickers out as the flames leap up around you, the end. But we didn't do that. We said...
No,
we're better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Stop! I have the solution to the riddle. The executioner laughs. He waves his lighted torch before your eyes. Suddenly the Chancellor steps forward. Stop the execution, he says in a loud voice. But, the executioner cries, the prisoner is stalling for time. That may be, says
Mom,
the
Chancellor. Mom, he doesn't want to die.
Come on.
This is bullshit. I've got my flaming torch here. He is doused in gasoline, I guess. I don't know. Medieval gasoline.
I want to burn him.
Well, of course, Titus, since the age of dinosaurs, cars have run on gasoline, so...
Yeah.
They must have had it in medieval times as well.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't cars be running on dinosaurs then? Should the dinosaurs are driving their cars with other dinosaurs
in
them?
No, but dinosaurs run the fucking dishwashers and shit. Have you never seen the Flintstones?
That may be, says the Chancellor, but the prisoner is like none we've seen before. Perhaps this is a wizard. This stranger may be the one person who can answer the riddle.
Oh, if it's a witch burner, but if it's a wizard, then fine.
Patriarchy.
Yeah.
Knights and ladies begin to chant, to the stake, to the stake. But the Chancellor leads you out of the courtyard and through an archway, beyond which is a large oak door guarded by two men with heavy swords and shields. One of them opens the door, and the Chancellor leads you to a large octagonal room, lighted by casement windows over each of the rough stone walls. At the far end of a long table sits King Henry himself. He looks at you curiously as he strokes his long, pointed beard. We have never been so happy as when we learned that you have the solution to the riddle, he says. So tell us what it is. You've been trying desperately to think of a solution. You think of the first line of the riddle.
I have a solution to the riddle. The answer is up dog.
Actually, our wizard has divined that the solution is not up dog, and he's figured that out by using Bofa, of course.
What's Bofa?
Bofa D's! Somewhere south, where it is colder. At least you have a couple of ideas. Normally it will be warmer, not cooler, if you go south. But the mountains may be cooler, even though farther south. And of course, the coldest place of all is the South Pole. Well, the king leans forward impatiently. So, we can say,
the Forbidden Castle
is to the south, behind the mountains where it is colder. Or we can say,
the Forbidden Castle
to the south, on the way to the South Pole.
You know what? I don't think these people know what the South Pole is.
So we can say, in the south behind the mountains?
Well, part of me want to crack the riddle because it's a game. Another part of me wants to see this guy die horribly as many times as possible, so I'm conflicted. I'm going to leave it up to Noggin and Titus to figure it out.
I still think it's up dog.
It's not up dog.
let's say the South Pole. Why not?
Sure.
Okay.
The Forbidden Castle.
It's to the south, you say. On the way to the South Pole, where it is cold. The king rises, his face reddening with anger. What nonsense are you telling me? What is this Southern Pole you speak of?
Good.
Suddenly you realize that the South Pole can't possibly mean anything to the king. It won't be reached for hundreds of years. You try to answer, but the king roars at his guards. They pick you up like a sack of potatoes and carry you through the door. Prepare for execution, the king calls, and be quick about it. The end.
That's exactly what I wanted.
I didn't actually think that would be the catch. Like, oh, fuck you. We don't know if it's health pose, but that makes sense, I guess.
Mm. Should we try the other one?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
The Forbidden Castle.
It's to the south, you say, behind the mountains where it is colder. The king begins to pace around the room. Your heart is pounding. Will he praise you or send you to your death? Suddenly he turns, smiling. There is wisdom in what you say. And within the south of France, there are mountains higher than any in England, and their tops are covered with snow, while flowers bloom in the valleys below. Now what is the rest of the solution? You think of the next line of the riddle. Where that which falls stays where it is, but you can hardly even guess at the solution. Could it have been something to do with the setting sun? The sun falls below the horizon, it really stays where it is. So you can say, the second line has to do with the setting sun, or you can say, we must go to the southern mountains, then I will be able to tell you.
Well,
I would assume it's snow.
It's probably snow. Let's go to the mountains.
No, we have to go to the mountains to tell him.
Yeah.
Okay. We must go to the southern mountains, you say. Then I will be able to tell you. The king frowns. He heaves a sigh and says, very well, I shall provide a ship which will take you to France, a day and a half's voyage from Dover, given a fair wind. There shall go with you the Earl of Kent and three of my best knights. Meanwhile, I shall gather my army together, enough men to conquer any castle, and we shall follow within the week. Soon, all of Europe will be mine.
Hooray!
He smiles a broad smile. He smiles a broad smile, then, pointing a finger at you, he says, but if you do not find
the Forbidden Castle,
I will see you hang from the tallest tree in England. Taking care to speak in the manner of the court, you say, never fear, my lord. I shall find the castle before the next full moon. Then, as the monk foretold, all Europe shall do homage to your sword. Well spoken, says the king. Now make ready, lords, knights, and vassals. We journey to France. You spend half of the next day floating down the Thames River on the royal barge. It docks in London, and though you are eager to see the ancient city, the Earl of Kent has other plans. He swings you up onto his horse and begins riding towards the southern shore. And I mean, to be fair, I don't want to spend as much any time in London as is necessary.
No, no. Let's just leave.
The smell of the fresh sea breeze and the flocks of gulls circling overhead tell you that you have arrived in Dover, where one of King Henry's ships is waiting to take you across the English Channel. You are glad to be safe for the moment, but you keep thinking about what will happen to you if you can't find
the Forbidden Castle.
The more you think about it, the more you think you'd better escape. Early the next morning, you, the Earl, and three of his knights set sail on one of the royal ships. The voyage is a smooth one, and you shortly before noon the next day, you step onto the fertile soil of France. The Earl of Kent and his knights mount their powerful war horses. You are ordered into the back of a wooden cart. Though the ride is bumpy and you'd rather be on one of the horses, you begin to enjoy the beautiful countryside. It is late afternoon when you come to a tavern. We will stop here, the Earl calls the driver. It is time to load our casks with good French wine. You will wait here, we shall not be long. Fucking hell, lads on tour, we've just gone on a booze cruise. They step inside and you are alone with the driver. He climbs down and walks ahead to check the horse's harnesses. As he tightens the leather strap, you realise this may be your only chance to escape. You survey the scene around you. Open pasture land lies on both sides of the road, and there is no place to hide, unless you make it to the bridge 100 yards or so down the road. The land beyond it is thickly wooded. So he can jump out and run for it, or he can seize the reins and urge the horses onwards.
Let's keep going.
Yeah, I don't like... I have more faith in us than that guy does.
Hmm. Okay. So we're not going to jump out and run for it, because what would even be the point of that?
Yeah, we're going to the Forbidden Castle.
Yeah.
You reach forward, grab the whip from the side of the cart, and take the reins. You crack the whip overhead and take the horses, launch the horses forward, knocking the driver to the ground. As the heavy wooden wheels roll past, he scrambles for the side of the cart. You bring the whip down again, shouting, but the driver has climbed into the cart. Suddenly one burly hand is on your shoulder, the other grabs the reins and slows the horses from their run. You are filled with dread as he steers the cart back to the tavern, where the knights are waiting. So, my little friend, says the Earl, you would betray the king. Our search for
the Forbidden Castle
will continue as soon as you are hanged. The rest of your adventure is too sad to tell. So that's kind of bullshit, because
we
didn't particularly want to run away either. We wanted to find out what the mystery was.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
The only other option here is to jump out then, I guess, and keep running that way.
Yeah.
So should we do that?
Sure,
yeah,
why
let's
not?
Jump out.
You jump out of the cart and race down the road. The bridge up ahead spans a swiftly flowing river. The woods beyond it should offer you a good hiding place, but maybe you could throw Henry's men off the track by doubling back and hiding behind the tavern itself. So we can either try to make it across the bridge, or we can run behind the tavern until we can decide what to do next.
Let's run behind the tavern.
Yeah, let's go there.
You dash around
classic
the side of the tavern.
Hiding spot.
Exactly.
You dash around the side of the tavern, keeping as low as you can so as not to be seen through the casement windows. As you round the rear corner, you almost crash into a young girl with the longest braids you've ever seen. "Who are you running from?" she asks, but she gives you no time to answer. "My name is Michelle. I live in the tavern. Come, I will show you where to hide." I assume she's got an outrageous French accent as well, but I'm not going to do one of those.
"My name is Michelle."
Ooh la la.
"Ooh, I will show you where to hide." Fernando.
Isn't Fernando a Spanish name?
Yeah, it is. I don't, but I wasn't necessarily doing a French accent there.
I just said outrageous accent. I think it worked.
Michelle's got an outrageous Lithuanian accent. You follow her down a steep flight of stone steps, through a dark passageway, and into a small room filled with casks of wine. The only light comes from a few cracks between the stones in the wall. "I will bring you food and milk when it is safe," she says. Then she turns and hurries up the stairs. You sit in the cellar, wondering what will become of you. When will Michelle return? You would like to sneak upstairs to get some food, but you don't dare. King Henry's knights will surely be looking for you. A few minutes later, the door swings open, and Michelle steps in, carrying a plate heaped with food. "Lamb, pears, and fresh bread," she says. "The cook is a friend of mine. I've good news, too. The English knights have left. They think you are hiding in the woods."
Holy shit, we are getting so much food.
Like, yeah.
This is like an Enid Blyton novel.
Some sort of culinary fixation.
Yep.
While you eat, you tell Michelle about everything that has happened since you arrived in England hundreds of years before your birth. She listens intently, and when you're finished, she says, "It is a strange story you tell, but I'm very glad you have come. My parents died when I was a small child. The innkeeper said I could live at the inn if I swept the floors and helped the cook. Now he works me night and day and beats me if I complain. I have been afraid to run away alone, but we can go together." "How?" "The cook will give us packs of food. I will take blankets and 2 good horses. The moon will be full tonight. We'll ride the road south. There's just one more thing. You can't expect to hide from anyone in those clothes. See what I've brought?" She hands you a small bundle. "Put these on." It is near midnight when Michelle comes to get you. A few moments later, the two of you gallop down the road. Free.
Hooray!
This Yay. Is okay.
This is alright. There is more. Of course, that wasn't an ending.
Of course not.
Yet. For 2 days, you and Michelle ride the trail south, stopping only long enough to get some sleep and let your horses rest. On the morning of the third day, you reach a fork in the trail, where you meet a shepherd. "Good morning, friend," you say. "Could you tell us which trail will take us south to the mountains?" The shepherd looks at you quizzically and shakes his head. "I could not say, except to say that you cannot go south by going south." "What new riddle is this?" Michelle demands. "It is no riddle," the shepherd replies, "but a simple truth. For the south of us lies no man's forest, where the trails are blocked by thickets and thorns, and deadly snakes await you underfoot and above dangling from the trees. So if you want to go south, you must first go east or west." "What lies to the west?" you ask. The shepherd frowns and says, "The trail to the west winds up around high rocky hills, where the January wind blows in July and the dragon of the ledges waits for foolish travellers."
Badass.
"And that sounds pretty good." "And to the east?" asks Michelle. "To the east are the lands of the Count Gaston, where half the wolves in Europe roam." You and Michelle exchange glances. "We cannot turn back now," she says. "We must go east or west, and they both sound bad to me."
You know what sounds less real than a fucking dragon? I mean, more real than a fucking dragon. It's some wolves.
Yeah,
I think.
Count Gaston and half the wolves of Europe.
Yeah, like, that sounds more plausible than the fucking dragon.
The dragon of the ledges, yeah.
Because I've seen a wolf and I've never seen a dragon.
I've never seen a wolf. I've seen a really big dog.
Yeah.
But that was close as I've ever come to seeing a wolf in real life. It was really big, though.
There are so big fucking dogs out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So, do you want to go to the Dragon of the Ledges, or do you want to Count Gaston and the Wolves?
Let's go see the dragon.
That sounds reasonable, yeah. Doesn't it?
Let's do it.
You and Michelle follow the trail to the west, which winds around the steep hillside. The sun is beginning to set and you see a rambling building made of stones and logs. Wild flowers and ferns are growing on the sod-covered roof. Goats and sheep graze nearby. "This must be a monastery," Michelle says. "But look, someone is using it as a farm." As she speaks, a man walks out of the building. "And who are you?" he asks. "We are travellers from the north. And who are you?" Auguste Le Bon, he replies. Age of service. Or as the French call him, Auguste the Bon.
Sure.
The birth, the.
Late of service, the Prince of Leon, but now I tend this farm for the philosopher knights. Auguste takes you inside and gives you bread and cheese and warm broth. He tells you that the philosopher knights spend most of their time studying philosophy and playing chess. Hmm. But they are at present visiting the court of the Prince of Leon, who it seems, fears an invasion by Henry, King of England. Naturally, he has called upon the philosophers for advice, says Auguste. Auguste asks if you would like to spend the night, and you and Michelle gratefully accept. In the morning, you ask Auguste if he thinks you can safely get past the Dragon of the Ledges. I cannot answer that, he says, for I have never known anyone to try. But to know of a secret trail through No Man's Forest, it is possible to get through safely, though there is great risk. I will be glad to show you the way, if you like. Whichever route you take, you must travel on foot, for the dragon trail is too steep and rugged, and the trail through the forest is sometimes no more than a tunnel through the thorns. Michelle beckons you aside. What do you think? She says. You're tempted to choose the dragon trail. After all, you're from the 20th century, and you know that dragons have really existed. But on the other hand, I do quite like, you're from the 20th century, and I say kill them all. So do you go through No Man's Forest, do you take the dragon trail, or do you wait at the farm until the philosophers come back?
Dragon trail.
Yeah. Dragon trail. Let's go dragon.
All right. Let's take a chance and follow the dragon trail, you tell Michelle. You thank Auguste for his help and start up the narrow winding trail that leads past the Dragon of the Ledges. You've been travelling about half a day when Michelle stops, so quickly that you bump into her. Looking ahead, you see that the trail leads into a clearing. Scattered about are piles of bones, whether human or animal you cannot tell. Suddenly you hear a hiss. A puff of smoke floats towards you from behind a huge boulder at the far end of the clearing. Michelle clutches your arm. The dragon! It is just beyond that big rock! That was a cumbersome sentence, if ever I've seen one.
Yeah.
In the 20th century, we don't believe in dragons, you say. You are not in the 20th century, says Michelle. Believe me, there are dragons in this century. You stay absolutely still. The hissing continues. Puffs of smoke drift towards you. You try to keep from coughing. You wonder whether you can outrun a dragon. You're scared, but you're also curious. So you can continue on through the clearing, or you can run away. I mean, tactically retreat.
Well,
keep going.
Yeah. Running away has not gotten us anywhere so far.
Exactly, yeah. We've come this far, you whisper to Michelle. I'm not going to turn back now. As quietly as you can, the two of you pick your way through the bleached white bones. Never surrender. You pick your way through the bleached white bones, hoping the dragon will not hear you. Michelle regains her courage and follows close behind, but the hissing grows louder. Sparks, glowing cinders, and billowing puffs of smoke fill the air. Looking down, you see the empty eye sockets of a human skull glaring up at you. Gritting your teeth, you continue past the rock, steeling yourself to face the dragon. There before you is a fire of blazing pine boughs. Sitting beside it is an old man with a long white beard. He holds a blacksmith's bellows to the flames and blows fire and sparks towards you. You jump back just in time to avoid being singed by the leaping flames. He seems too busy to notice you as he lifts a ram's horn to his ear and to his mouth and blows an eerie wailing blast, the terrible sound of the Dragon of the Ledges. Michelle runs up, laughing. The old man lays down his bellows and his horn. He stands there, hands outstretched. You have met the dragon, he says. You are the first who had dared come so close. Aha, says Michelle. Wait until the Prince of Leon learns your secret. Please, please, the old man holds out his arms to you. I am an escaped serf. If they find me, they will hang me. Like, that just seems to be how people say hello in this book.
Yeah.
Just executions.
Hanging. Constantly.
We will keep
it's
your secret.
It's where the popular theme of how's the hanging came about in the 20th century.
That makes too much sense. We will keep your secret, you say, if you will just guide us on our way. And where are you going, he asks. We are searching for
the Forbidden Castle.
The old man looks wistfully upward for a moment. That which falls but does not move, he says, smiling. That's part of the riddle. Will you keep my secret if I tell you the answer? Yes. Then follow me. The old man leads you further along the steep winding trail, up over a high ridge. From the crest, the land drops down into a steep gully, and then rises up to become a magnificent snow-capped peak. He holds a finger to his lips. Listen. You stand there, straining your ears. Across the ravine, you can barely hear the faintest rushing sound, as faint as a memory. "A waterfall," Michelle exclaims. The old man smiles. "That which falls stays where it is." You thank the old man and wish him well, and you and Michelle hurry on along the trail with renewed energy and high spirits. The trail descending into the ravine is steep and rugged, and you're glad to reach the bottom safely and begin the long climb up the mountainside. When you finally reach the ledge and look straight into the silvery cascade, the waterfall roars in your ears. The pines and ferns glisten with spray. You work your way around to the left of the falls and climb to a higher ledge. There it is, gleaming in the late afternoon sunlight, walls built upon walls, massive blocks of chalk-white stones, and soaring above them, four ivory towers that seem to pierce the mountain sky.
The Forbidden Castle!
Hooray!
Oh, we found it.
Yeah, we found it. Finally.
We did it. Nice work, everyone.
But wait, there's more. "Never have I seen anything so beautiful," Michelle says. Then, looking back toward the valley below, you see a line of mounted horses. At least 100 men are following on foot. "Michelle, it's King Henry. He must have traced our path." "Do you think he can counter
the Forbidden Castle?"
she asks. You and Michelle run still higher, toward the castle. Strange to see, the drawbridge lies open. There aren't even chains or ropes by which it could be raised. A tiny woman wearing a long grey habit comes forth to greet you. "Welcome. I am Sister Anna." "Good day, sister," you say. "Where is the prince who rules this great castle? And why is it called
the Forbidden Castle?"
Michelle adds.
Because it's forbidden, you dumb fuck.
Wow.
Sister Anna smiles. "There is no prince nor knights here, only the Sisters of Hope. You see, once a great prince ruled this castle, attended by a splendid court." I feel like... I called the Sisters of Hope. Can I just, like, rewrite this book and call them the Sisters of Mercy?
No. Oh, yeah.
Okay. There's no prince nor knights here, only the Sisters of Mercy. You see, once a great prince ruled this castle, attended by a splendid court, but a plague swept across the land and wiped out all the lords and ladies who lived here. Every one. For years no one dared to come near it, and so it became known as
the Forbidden Castle.
But we vowed not to be afraid of plagues, whether borne by rats or kings or knaves. We came to tend the sick and helpless. Since then, good fortune has come to all who have visited here in friendship. As Sister Anna is speaking, the third line of the riddle comes to your mind. You'll find what isn't what it is. Is this a castle, or isn't it, you ask? The sister smiles. You need only look at it to see that it is a castle, she says. And yet it is not a castle, with a lord and his vassals, but a refuge for the poor and helpless. Therefore, it isn't what it is.
This is the shittiest riddle.
You've been so amazed by the sister's story that you've forgotten about King Henry and his army. But now you hear bugles blowing, shouts, and the sound of horses. Other sisters come from the castle. You and Michelle step aside as they form a line to block King Henry and his powerful army. King Henry's army winds its way up the mountainside. At last, the armored troop comes to a halt. King Henry dismounts. He walks up to Sister Anna, draws his sword, and holds it high above him. The sisters stand motionless before him. Suddenly, the king hurls his sword to the ground. How can I conquer a castle defended by little old ladies, he roars, if it would violate the code of chivalry?
Very carefully.
Damn you, chivalry code.
Sister Anna steps forward and touches his arm. And pray, great king, she says, how would it profit you to conquer this castle? You already have a castle of your own. Were you to rule all Europe, I'm sure that you'd soon have more problems than pleasures. So stay if you wish. Drink our nectar and eat honey bread. Forget about conquests and go in peace. As an aside quickly, have you seen that video of the guy from Mega 64 just drinking a bottle of honey and then all his friends telling him that if he keeps doing that he's going to give himself liver damage and possibly like a really bad infection, and then he just finishes the bottle?
No, I'm not.
No.
I don't do that.
I want to finish this bottle.
No.
Yeah.
But everything I keep reading in the chat is scaring me.
Ryan just called me.
Oh.
He said, no joke, stop eating that honey or you're going to die.
Oh! Ryan, stop.
That will be in the show notes. It is genuinely one of my favourite videos on the online. I like it a lot. The king stares at the castle and at the mountains and the waterfall. He slowly shakes his head. What will I tell my knights, he says softly. They will laugh at me for leading them here. Tell them, Sister Anna says with a smile, that you led them here to teach them a lesson.
Yeah.
It's just being a dick to these people. King Henry turns towards his followers. He shouts a command and they turn and start slowly down the mountain. The sisters invite you and Michelle to stay with them. You gratefully accept their invitation. but you're already thinking of your next journey to search for the entrance to the Cave of Time. For now, you wish nothing more than return to your own century and your own home. The end.
But it's not clear whether that would happen, actually.
Yeah. No. There's probably a Cave of Time somewhere in southern France, but... Whoa.
Whoa, what, wow. What a story.
That I'm
coming from some other books, I'm actually pretty satisfied, but there's a lot of shit happening. Like, you could have just, like, spent your days in the forest. Like, how was an ending?
Yeah. Like, I'm expecting we just got stuck in an endless loop or something there as well.
Yeah, like, in some other books that I've featured on, it's just, like, very direct, like... No, you have to do this thing, and you're either gonna do a thing or you're gonna die. And this one had like, well, you might end up doing some weird shit in the forest, lead the merry band of brothers.
Yeah, do you want me to go through and find some of the good endings or bad endings, as the case may be?
Sure.
Why not?
I could use a rest myself, you say, as you gratefully sit down on the soft moss between a gnarled old tree. Michelle quickly joins you. We'd best take only a few minutes, she says. You lean up against the tree and close your eyes. It seems like only a minute later when you open them again, at least an hour must have gone by, for the sun has set, and there is barely enough light for you to see the trail ahead. Michelle is sound asleep. Quick, wake up! You shake her and pull her to her feet. The two of you half walk, half run along the trail for a few minutes before the darkness closes in and you're forced to grope your way through the thorns and brambles, trying to stay on the trail, but it doesn't matter anymore. All around you, wherever you look, the snakes are coming out. The end.
The snake ending.
The snakes.
Yeah, on the Forbidden Castle Wikia. That's the snake. That one's called the snake ending. Good. Ugh. That was a weird one. I guess that's what happens if we try to go through the through the forest, which they'd already established was a pretty bad time. So don't do that.
Just stay away.
What happens if we go to the wolf guy?
Let's find out, actually. I'm going to go back, try to find it. Turn to page 73. You and Michelle ride to the east, through forests and meadows, over hills and through valleys. It is well past midday when you unsaddle your horses and sit under the shade of a towering elm tree to rest and eat. As you prepare to resume your journey, two men approach on foot. They are dressed in peasant clothes, the one that wears a gold medallion on his chest. Is it far to the southern mountains, you ask them? Mountains are only a day's journey to the south, across the lands of Count Gaston, replies one of the men. You'll find the trail so steep that you'll not be able to use your horses. We shall take care of them for you. What do you mean? Michelle cries. Suddenly, the men untether your horses. What are you doing? Michelle cries. Stop! But the strangers mount your horses and ride off at a brisk trot. You run after them, but there is no chance of catching up. Your horses are gone for good.
Nice.
Well,
how rude.
Mm-hmm.
There's still plenty more.
Oh.
Should we keep going? Keep going until we get an ending.
Sure.
Sure.
Using the sun as your compass, you and Michelle continue on foot, heading southeast, hoping that you may safely pass through Count Gaston's land without being seen by the men. Later that day, after travelling through a pine forest, you're glad to see a broad stream up ahead and rolling fields beyond it. I think we've reached the lands of Count Gaston, says Michelle. No sooner has she spoken than you hear the howling of a wolf behind you, and then another to one side, much closer, and another. They are on our trail, says Michelle. It will not be long before they find us. As she talks, you look for something to use as a weapon. You pick up a fallen branch and break it in two. Now you have a good club. Ho, ho, ho. You can probably defend yourself against a single wolf, but you hear others much closer. The pack is closing in. Michelle points to a tall pine with branches reaching almost to the ground. Quick, climb up into that tree. You have the same thought, but another idea occurs to you. If you could walk through the stream for a way, the wolves would lose your scent, and you could escape on the other side of the stream. So you can climb the tree, run to the tree and climb up it, or you can tell Michelle to follow us and run through the stream.
Well, if we climb up the tree, we're going to get stuck in a tree, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Nobody wants to get stuck in a tree. Running through a stream, though.
Yeah, stream. That's wicked sick.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to outrun dogs or Nazgul... Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you also need to do river magic and make the big turn the water into horses for that to work?
Not necessarily. I don't think we can cross water. I'm not sure, but Like,
it's been a long time since I read Lord of the Rings, but I distinctly remember that they do start crossing the stream in the film, and then they get wiped out.
Get horsed. Yeah, they can cross water. Nothing
did you say they
them.
Get horsed?
I did say they get horsed. You heard me.
I'm gonna have to start using that. Just like if somebody's annoying, then tell them to go get horsed. All right. So let's cross the stream, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
You and Michelle quickly reach the stream. The water is cold, but you wade easily downstream, for the water hardly rises above your knees. Finally, you feel you've come far enough to lose the wolves. After picking your way over round slippery rocks, you emerge on the other side of the stream. Through the woods, you can see a freshly ploughed field. You hurry towards it. You have no sooner reached the field when you hear the pounding of hoofbeats. A moment later, three horsemen come over a rise, riding straight for you. Two of them look like common knights, but the third has a dome-shaped helmet topped by a sharp, pointed spike.
His face Siegmeier? By...
I think it's the Kaiser, actually.
Fuck.
His face is covered by a full black beard, so that all you can see of him are his steel-grey eyes. Who are you to set foot on the lads of Count Gaston? He demands. You start to explain, but he interrupts. Have you not heard of me? You nod your head. Then know that I fear no one. Now, what is your purpose here? We are looking for...
The Forbidden Castle!
Michelle says. The Count laughs. You are neither wise enough nor strong enough to reach the Forbidden...
The Forbidden Castle!
I
almost fucked up. For it is high in the mountains to the south. You may pass safely through my lands on your journey, or, if you like, I shall permit you to remain here in my service. You will live well, and you will learn more than you could by journeying all over Europe. If you stay, know that it shall be not for one day less than a year. At the end of that year, if you wish, I myself will guide you to...
The Forbidden Castle!
Can you just tell us how to get there? You ask. I have said what I intended to say, the Count replies. You must make your decision now. So he can continue on through the lands of Count Gaston, or he can stay in his service for a whole year.
Fuck that.
No, I don't know. Didn't he say to educate us and shit?
Yeah, but...
Sounds like Count a pre... Gaston. Okay. That would... Actually, I should calm down my excitement, because I realized that might be cool from someone from the Middle Ages, but as a 20th century dude, who probably know more shit than that guy knows.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm.
I don't
think so. So what are we doing?
We're leaving. Fuck that
Yeah,
guy.
Let's keep going.
I'll tell you now that we stayed with him for a year, and that would be a bad ending. So...
Well, how would that be bad? Like, it's like, oh, you never want to leave.
Should I read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fearing that you could never make it to
the Forbidden Castle
on your own, you and Michelle agree to stay in the service of the Count. You soon learn what it's like to be in the service of Count Gaston. As a page, you must always be ready to assist your lord. Each day you must prepare his clothing, care for his armor, and wait on his table. You even learn to hunt with falcons. Michelle is in training to be a lady of the court. Time is devoted
okay,
to
hunting with falcons is something you wouldn't know in the 20th century.
Yeah.
So that's pretty dope.
Hunting, I would give up a year if I could learn how to hunt with falcons
and
do other cool shit.
And hang out with ladies.
You know.
No. Oh no.
Her time is devoted to music, poetry, and Latin, as well as writing. Can I just say that it's cool how choose your own adventure books have always got like a gender neutral protagonist? But then they'll just do shit like... So the lady learns how to do music and poetry and learn Latin and ride horses, whereas you're doing stuff like making armor and getting falcons and... wait, hang on. We didn't think this through.
I like the fact that it's a dude from the US that gets dropped several hundred years into the past in England, but the book's just fine with everyone speaking English, and then at the same... Also acknowledges that, hey, you get taught Latin. And everyone in France speaks English because you didn't know French.
Yeah.
So.
Also, that.
I mean, you may speak French. You've been in the Cave of Time how many times before this?
Yeah, that's true. Also, like, how the even like the English language must have changed so much over those 100 years as
Very
well.
True.
Yeah. Like. Our main character goes back and says, I don't know, what's the thing people say nowadays? Cheeky Nando's.
Cheeky Nando's.
That is what they say.
And then they don't understand what he's talking about.
Not me the fuck, the counterpoints.
Okay. At the end of the day, there is chess and backgammon for you, and an astronomy for Michelle, then bed. Every day is the same. There's plenty of food, and your master...
Okay, that's the one where the lady wins out.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, chess and backgammon's fun, but it's no learning about astronomy. Mm.
Astronomy is awesome. Your heart aches. You long to be free. One day, about a month later, the Count visits you. What's the matter with you two, he says. You eat well and you're sheltered from the cold winds and rain. You have warm clothes, the Count grows angry as he talks. You're ungrateful for all that I have done for you. Would you rather I had left you to the wolves? You bow your head. There's nothing you can say. The Count strides off. You return to your cell and carve another tiny mark in the corner of the thick oak floor. Only 327 days until you and Michelle are free again. The end. That's just us taking everything for granted and being like,
yeah. Oh no, I wanted to see the cool castle instead of being in a cool castle and hunting with fucking falcons.
I wanted to hang out with Garth and live in the dirt and have a dirt house and a dirt wife.
Oh. I know how to hunt with falcons, but instead I wanted to hunt with a stick and hunt more sticks. I guess.
Instead, we're living in a building with blankets and hot food. I wanted to get rained on every night. Ugh. Thanks.
I don't have ticks.
I'm surprised that we somehow managed to have more happy endings than sad ones, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, is that normal? I feel like that's not normal.
Not really, no.
We're just amazing at this.
We're really good. We are.
Yeah.
I also think we're really good.
Alright, there's another ending that I want to go through.
Yeah.
So if we say no to him, thank you for your offer, you tell the Count. We would rather have our freedom. The Count leaps down from his horse, grabs you by your hair and swings you around. Then he pushes you roughly away and looks into your pack. I see that you have very little food left. Beyond my lands are woods thick with robbers and wolves. You are brave, but you are foolish. You start to speak, but his Count is already remounting his horse. Adieu, he cries as he rides briskly away. One of the knights returns you your pack. The other prods you with his lance. Get moving. He could have given us a little more time to think, says Michelle. Count Gaston never asks twice, says the knight. Follow me. Gaston's knights escort you to the edge of the forest. You and Michelle travel on through the woods, hoping to find food and shelter. Fortunately, you encounter neither wolves nor robbers, but the weather changes. A chill wind blows from the north and great dark clouds fill the sky. Suddenly, Michelle grabs your arm. Look, some sort of cave. Shall we take shelter before the storm hits? So we can either ignore this and carry on and get rained on, or we can go into this well-timed cave that has just appeared.
Oh, well-timed cave. Timed cave.
How very timely.
Timed cave. Okay. No, yeah, keep going.
You step into the cave, then wait for your eyes to adjust to the darkness, but Michelle goes on a few feet ahead. Suddenly she cries out, help, I'm sliding. You grab her arm and try to pull her up, but now you're both falling.
It is broad daylight. And perhaps even time itself.
It is broad daylight. You and Michelle are both sitting in a field. There is a paved road nearby. A greyhound bus is going by. A big tractor trailer is right behind it. Whoosh! An oil truck whizzes by. Michelle screams. What are those monsters? What a noise. It is horrible. Everything's okay, you say. As you look across the road at the familiar sign that makes you wonder how Michelle will go for a Big Mac and a shake. The end.
Nice. I feel that the last sentence in that ending immediately puts to mind some, like, really feel-good music. Just, like, some...
yeah.
Just some, like, lighthearted rock starts playing. A Big Mac and a shake. Like, you know, like, wake me up before you go or something.
Yeah.
Super cut of, like, that feels like one of those, like, weird time travel movies or whatever, where, like, stranger in a strange place, and you just, like, medieval lady having Big Macs and watching movies and getting scared, and he's like, we're dating now.
He came here to find a Big Mac and a shake, but instead he found... friendship.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly what I'm picturing here. My favorite ending so far.
Yeah. I don't know if we can actually get better than that. Should we call it there?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Cool. Why not? Thank you for joining me in
the Forbidden Castle,
everybody. Book report. What do you guys think of that?
It was okay. Like, coming from being used to very bad adventure
books.
Some of
the worst books that we featured on the show so far. Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I liked it also.
I didn't expect that many happy endings. I'm like, okay, there's a big man in the woods.
Yeah, this is one that I would probably, like, this is a style that I would actually enjoy reading, because instead of, like, I have to do this task, oh, I found the ending that, like, kills me or something. It's like, no, this is just a fun adventure. You can end up doing whatever. Mm-hmm. I like yeah. that.
I will say, though, that the fucking riddle was bullshit.
It was kind of just gibberish that you figure out as you go through it.
It wasn't
well.
Really much of a because riddle. It's just
yeah, and because you can keep your finger on the
it's
page,
just some nonsense.
One of two questions in a multiple choice thing. Ugh, that bit wasn't so good. But yeah, I thought it was pretty alright, I guess.
I expected to fall through the cave of time more.
Yeah.
In some terrible loop or something.
If you
shoot yourself.
If you'd be interested in the Cave of Time, then why not go back and listen to episode 56 of the show with Joe Screbbles, Steve Hogarty, and Kate Gray. We've got it live at Loading Bar. Ta-da! I was quite proud of that one. I sang a song at the start of it.
Yeah, I listened to the song. It was a good song, and then I listened to the original later. I like, listened to it three times that day. It's a good nice. Song.
Thank you.
So when you listened to the original, was that because you were like, I like Robin's version, but I might need the real thing now?
Yeah,
or
no.
Or was
it
where
exactly
like, that. Holy shit, that version was so good. I wonder what the original sounds like.
And like, and oh no.
Oh no. I need to find a third version.
I hope Knorr records one.
All of these are horrible. So I guess Robin was spot on.
So marks out of 5 for that book then. Who wants to go first?
I'm going to give it like a 3.
Yeah, I was going to say 3. 3 is good for me.
You know pretty what? Good? I'm going to give it a forbidden 3.
Ooh.
Oh.
I don't know what that means, but I'm okay with that. Oh. But yeah, I like that
it's
book.
It's forbidden.
I liked how it was like, generally like you said, quite feel-good atmosphere as well. I liked that we met a nice French lady called Michelle, who hang out with us for most of the book. And then she learned what a Big Mac and Freedom Fries taste like, so
that was pretty good too.
So I'm going to give that 5 out of 5. Thanks for joining me, Nuggin, Titus, and Knorr. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Is there anything I'd like to plug?
No, not for me, no.
I don't, like, no. Not really.
Oh. Friday Night Blood Bowl, I guess.
I stream Blood Bowls and other video games on Twitch every week, usually on Fridays and perhaps other days. Twitch.tv/Knorr and then _.
Because you forgot the password to just Knorr without the underscore.
Well, no,
because someone else had that nickname.
Yeah, it's such a common nickname.
I mean, it's a Doctor Who reference.
Exactly.
Oh,
yes.
I see. Carry on.
The Knornians, the proud warrior race.
I might come back for Friday Night Blood Bowl at some point in the future. Maybe. Who knows? I've got a job now, so.
That's
wow!
Fucked up.
Wow!
Well, fortunately for you, Friday nights are generally accepted the off work hours.
Yeah.
Yes, generally accepted.
Oh, you got a fucked up weird job?
I got a fucked up job with weird shift patterns.
Coming next week. Monday morning Blood Bowl.
Just for you.
I could do that.
That's
not
happening.
Okay. Logan, is there anything you'd like to plug?
No, I'm good.
Alright. Also, before I disappear, I'd like to say that the person who designed and illustrated the logo for the podcast, Hallie, is currently moving house. And she is taking commissions, and she will draw whatever the hell you want her to draw. And she's pretty good at the drawing business, so go and have a look.
I've
seen
that
in the show notes. Also, if you do like the podcast, then why not hop over to
Get the fuck out! Sorry.
No!
We don't need your kind of positivity in here.
Yeah, creative criticism, please.
Go to patreon.com/adventurepod. And if you like the show enough to put some money towards it, then by using that service, you can donate as little as a cent an episode, or as many as 2 cents an episode.
That's it. That's the only options.
Yeah, it turns out. And you can send that to me if you want to tip any amount for the show. And if you do that, then that means you can send me an abusive message on Patreon, and I guess I'll just have to read it. You can do that on Twitter as well, but I'll take it less seriously. But yeah, otherwise, thank you very much for listening to the show, and hope to see you again next week if you enjoyed it. Bye!
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye.